The views and opinions expressed by the guests of the Inspira podcast do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of any agency of the United States government or any organization, public or private.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Inspira podcast, hosted by your girl, me, Erica Mueller Chen. I'm an international development specialist with over a decade of experience leveraging the amazing power of sport to promote peace and positive social impact. My career has allowed me to live in Europe, Southern Africa, and Latin America. In 2022, I accepted an offer for my dream job in sports diplomacy. And I also became an employee family member to a U.S. diplomat, aka an EFM. This podcast is all about inspiration and career advice. Each episode, I'll interview an inspirational global changemaker working in sport for development, social impact, or the diplomatic service. This series is perfect if you have interest in breaking into one of these sectors. Or you've already landed that dream role and are keen to learn from thought leaders. Enjoy today's episode and stay inspired.
I'd been invited as one of the youth leaders, and I remember being in the room, you know, with different policymakers, these, you know, a lot of loaded but important conversations around how do we prevent youth from being at risk of violent extremism. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, just as a youth leader, I'd love to know, have you considered sport? And the room went silent.
Welcome, friends. Today's special guest is Dr. Lynn C. Sembili Gisheha. Lynn is a 2016 Commonwealth Scholar from Kenya. She completed her PhD in Sociology of Sport at Loughborough University with a particular focus on sport for development and peace and preventing the spread of violent extremism. She also earned her master's in sustainable peace through sport from the International University of Monaco. Currently, Lynn is the project manager for sport for development and peace at the Commonwealth Secretariat. She's also the director of Sports with a Goal Africa, a grassroots sports organization that uses sport to reach and empower individuals and communities. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you and where are you calling us from?
Oh, thank you, Erica. Lovely to hear you. Lovely to see you. I'm great. Thank you. And I am dialing in from St. Kitts and Nevis today. Very, very, very exotic. But I'm here for work, just for the record. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Yes, my
and
pleasure.
How are you?
Oh, I guess I can't be jealous because I also in like a sunny climate right now, but I haven't been to St. Kitts before. So I feel a little bit envious, but very happy for you and slightly confused, but proud that you're participating in this podcast while you're there. So thank you.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Because I've called this podcast Inspira, I like to mention why my guest inspires me. So from learning about you, after we had our intro call recently, I thought of about 20 reasons why you inspire me. But I like to flatter people at the beginning, so you know, get ready. You inspire me because you've amassed SDP experience wearing three really important hats. So experience as a practitioner, a researcher, and a policy maker. And I honestly can't say I know many people who have done that or had the time or interest to do that, which is super impressive. And then the other thing I'll say is that geographically, you've covered so much ground from Kenya to the US to the UK to Monaco and now St. Kitts. And finally, on a personal note, you're just super kind and authentic, and I've loved chatting with you. So I'm grateful to have this time with you today.
Wow. I feel really special. And thank you so much. That's really kind. Let's tuck in. This is really exciting.
Can you please share your career journey with us and perhaps what led you to sport for social change?
Okay, so that's a really good question to start us off. So my journey into sport for social change or sport for development and peace started well way back in the early 2000s. And at that point in time, we were doing some community sports through Sports for the Goal Africa back in Baringo in Kenya. And it was really to rally support for the Millennium Development Goals. So we had the MDGs and now we're in the SDGs. And at that point in time, my sister had started this work on Swagger. And I was tagging along, supporting with the rollout of hats and banners and footballs. And we also did some traditional games. And you know what? It was just incredible to witness how both young and old people, people who were from the community and from neighboring communities came together to participate in the sport day. But we also used that platform to talk to them about the MDGs. And maybe it's worth saying that at that point, she was the Kick Out Poverty Campaign coordinator. And that was my introduction to it. But then if we move back academically, whilst I was in the United States International University, USIU in Nairobi, Kenya, I was doing a program on, my bachelor's was in international relations. But as I was wrapping up my studies and I'd gotten into a lot of conversations with my lecturers around community development, around peace building, and finding a tool that would be appropriate for bridging peace building conversations and conflict resolution. Then that, you know, sport started to spark that conversation through Swagger and just starting to see that this is a really ideal vehicle. I'm not saying that it's perfect, but we could see that it was working. It was low cost. It was our hometown, our village, and we managed to amass a lot of people coming regularly for those sessions on the MDGs and really framing them in a community setting. So that was my journey into it. And fast forward into 2010, whilst I was at the UN Office for Partnerships in New York, I finished my volunteer work and then I joined the Department of Political Affairs. But whilst I was there, I think what's more important to this conversation is that Peace and Sport had started the Masters in Sustainable Peace through Sport. And when I saw the program shared, again, I feel like my sister has been one of the links throughout this journey. She shared the email and said, check this out, you know, check this program out. And I immediately saw it and I knew that this is what I wanted to do because I'd finished international relations, learned so much in that year around policy, around the workings of the United Nations, diplomacy, helped organize some sports breakfasts with key athletes within that same office. But when I saw Masters in Sustainable Peace through Sport, it was a no-brainer. I was like, that's my program. I want to apply to that. And we were the first inaugural class. We were six students from all around the world. Can you imagine just six young people, passionate, committed to sport at different levels of sport? Some of them were elite sports athletes. Others were community officers. And we all just had that same thread of we love sport. We love sport for development and peace. We've seen what it can do at that granular level. And we're here. So being part of that program that was hosted by the International University of Monaco and in partnership with University for Peace. And we had the bridge being Peace and Sport, the apolitical organization that's based out of Monaco. It was a very unique program because we had academics that, you know, we see within the SDP sector come to teach us on the practical elements of sport for development and peace, the theoretical frameworks around it, what it's about, how to apply it, how to study it in this really unique way, versus coaches, you know, who had years of experience from around the world also come to talk about the practical elements. So we had our feet firmly on the ground because we'd understand that it's not perfect. You have to have a balanced view of SDP or sport for social change. So I progressed my journey and then back home to Kenya to continue the work on Sports for the Goal Africa. And apologies, this is a really long-winded answer, but back to Kenya from the master's program in 2013 and continue to roll out, you know, discussions on sport for development and peace whilst also doing core projects within Nairobi and Nakuru. I still felt that there was still a further link, you know, for sports and sports for development and peace that I could tap into and that I could offer. And in 2015, I had attended the, you remember they had the UNOSDP youth leaders camps? Mm-hmm. I think we were the last camp. So flown out to Florida and gone with a couple of other coaches in SDP, in sport for development, from Kenya and across the world. And lifelong friendships were formed there as well. And it was a real endorsement or a real encouragement for me, having done the master's, to know that, yes, this, it was just a real affirmation that this is the right path. This is what I want to be doing. And I'm going full force with Swagger. So when, with the training amassed from that, the youth leadership camp, the learning journeys, the growth mindset, came back, applied a lot of that back in Kenya, and even took that to other regions such as Marsabit, where we did a UNDP program on sports and preventive violent extremism. And then in any areas I could get to speak to sport and sport for development peace, took it there as well. I think what's important to mention is that in 2015, was the first regional conference on preventing violent extremism. At that point, they called it countering violent extremism. And Kenya, Nairobi was hosting this first major conference. I'd been invited as one of the youth leaders. And I remember being in the room, you know, with different policymakers, these, you know, a lot of loaded but important conversations around how do we prevent youth from being at risk of violent extremism. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, this, just as a youth leader, I'd love to know, have you considered sport? And the room went silent, you know? And for me, that was, yes, then that's a solution. It's a low-hanging fruit. Can we explore this? And so I applied for a PhD because I knew that this is the rising number of radicalization in Kenya and around the East African region from the Al-Shabaab and other gangs. And I just thought, right, I have this training in sport. I have this training in sport for social change and sport for development and peace. I would love to apply it in this emerging context. And no, it didn't make sense, but I applied. And I got shortlisted for the Commonwealth Scholarship and had to defend my case. And it didn't make sense to a lot of people in the room as to why I'm combining these two approaches. But, you know, I'm grateful that the stars aligned in that sense, because then I got accepted. I only wanted to go to Loughborough because I really loved the university. And I also knew that if I was given the opportunity, it would be a very privileged position to work from, and people that I'd read on and really respect were at that university as well. So I got in, and October of 2016, started the sports for development and peace in preventing violent extremism PhD thesis. And there was almost very non-existent literature at the time on sport in PVE, but started that journey and it was emerging. And now there is obviously a lot going on in that space, which is really encouraging, because then that means that there's greater impact occurring. So that is a very long-winded answer as to how I got here and continue to be here and continue to commit as a practitioner, academic, and now in the policy space, but maintaining that fluidity across the three has been the greatest juggle to date, but absolutely rewarding. Thanks, Erica. Mm-hmm. I think we can end there.
My pleasure. Yeah, we're done for the day. Thanks for coming. One quick follow-up I have in terms of the master's program that you did in Monaco, you know, that it sounds like that was about 10 or so years ago, and I'm curious what you think today about how that content taught by professors at the university level, at a master's level, and thinking about how sport can promote peace. If you were in charge, how would you see that content being different today in terms of what you hope people can learn about and what kind of the priority areas are versus 10 or 15 years ago?
Such great questions. First of all, that's a long time ago now, I realize. But in hindsight, or rather looking forward or looking ahead, what would I like embedded with the multiple hats that I'm wearing? I would add a third prong to it. I would add the policy, maybe even another fourth one. And that would be around sport, social enterprise. I think there's a clear intersect between the benefits of SDP and the investment in sport. And that's something that's become very alive to me in the recent past. I think we often, you know, want to focus on doing the work, but there's a greater reward in measuring the impact of sport, right? Measuring the impact of sport to the sustainable development goals, and even for the wider community. I think seeing the numbers of activity or inactivity, for example, will lead to greater and expedited action, and B, greater investment in the sector, which means, great more money and more financing for the sector, and D, partnerships across the world for the sector. So I would love to tell students that it doesn't have to be disconnected. You can have the policy, the global, the national, the regional, and the local coexisting simultaneously and speaking to each other. So I think that those are some of the things that I would add to the content of the course. I would introduce esports, but also from the frame of development as well, and not shy away from that. Yes, it's contested. Yes, it has its challenges, but so does sport. And so that would be something that I would encourage. I think that would make for some very rich, really well-informed students. And it would remove that imbalanced view of sport, right? Because we find that maybe some people think that it's yes, we focus on the good and the positive of sport, but it has its challenges and it needs support in order to give us the full benefits. So yeah, that's what I would do given the opportunity and what we're going to advocate for.
Well, if you start your own Lynn Sustainable Peace Through Sport, sign me up, because that sounds like a very robust curriculum that you just designed in 3 minutes. So I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And one other quick follow-up to your career overview in your work with Sports with a Goal Africa, SWAGA. First of all, did you and your sister know that that would be such a cool acronym?
100%.
And Lynn, how do you think that work has contributed to your view of the sector or entering certain spaces with a really grounded real life experience of, okay, this is what sport did for this community. And I saw the opportunities, I saw the limitations. That's really helping me contribute to these other conversations with other stakeholders. What does that feel like as you navigate spaces?
Oh, wow. It gives me confidence, you know. I'm speaking from experience. I'm speaking from an authentic point of view. So it's not abstract. And I can call or request sound bites or discussions from these different practitioners. And it gives me confidence because I'm aware now, I guess, became even more aware of my positionality as a researcher, as a African woman, as, you know, just all these different intersectionality really across the sector, a voice from the global south, what that means and not shying away from that, bringing that to the table and opening up spaces for research to be framed differently in different languages so that we don't silence other voices. It's in just looking back and looking forward, I'm really grateful that I can navigate confidently, you know? And I'd encourage, I guess the advice there is start sooner, start operating just as yourself sooner. You get refined with time. And that's important for anybody out there listening who's entering this space or has been in this space, or you have something to share, so share it.
Quick break here to highlight what I consider to be a fabulous resource that I've created for any listeners out there interested in learning more about the Sport for Development and Peace sector. You've come to the right place. In addition to Inspira podcast episodes that you can listen to, I've created a written resource that you can read, which currently has over 90 items I've curated from my own experience and vetted with other experts in the field. These include databases to find award-winning organizations, links to reports, books, and research, as well as recommended newsletters and recorded webinars, all Sport for Dev related. I encourage you to have a look. You can find this resource by visiting my link tree listed in each episode's show notes, then clicking Erica's Global Resource Hub. That's right, Erica's Global Resource Hub. If you like what you read and what you hear, I'd love it if you could give Inspira a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and write a kind review. That would be so energizing for me. And it would help Inspira reach more ears. Thanks, and back to the show. In addition to confidence, you've mentioned operating as yourself, and you've also said intersectionality a couple times. And I want to zoom in on that intersectionality and maybe thinking about the three hats, the three perspectives, among others, that you're bringing to this conversation as a practitioner, as a researcher, as a policymaker. I know from my limited experience in comparison to you that the intersectionality is not happening enough. There are silos, whether it's researchers staying amongst researchers, practitioners staying amongst practitioners, the list goes on. And so I'm wondering more about why you've chosen to wear these multiple hats, be a practitioner, be a researcher, be in the policy room as well, and anything you may have learned from wearing those different hats that someone who focuses on just one of those may not know.
Coming to wear the hats almost happened organically or out of frustration at some bits. I have to maybe start that. My response with saying that it's not easy because you're coming into different rooms and different conversations and different perspectives. Thankfully, the common thread is sport for development and peace, and we all agree with that. But how it's framed or how it's understood, how it's digested, how it's framed looks different, and you have to learn to speak like the room that you're in, and you have to in order to keep the big end goal in mind, which is we want impact, social impact, we want great impact, we want healthier societies, we want children playing sport, we want investment in the sector. In order to reach that goal, there's ways to frame your responses or your questions as you navigate those spaces. Why I've chosen to wear them is that I find I'm able to draw on them at different times. So, and also I think we have to move away from trying to separate them. I spent years, and I think we had this in our previous conversation, I spent years trying to separate, silo my identities. It is very exhausting because you are one person. And you show up as one person in these different rooms, stay authentic, but add to what the room needs to hear. address the room as you would. So when I'm on the football pitch, I am still Lynn, but I'm Lynn with the SDP practitioner, for example. When I'm in academia or writing, I'm a student or I am a researcher, but I'm still myself and I'm bringing my whole self as much as possible. Perhaps not seeking permission to bring my whole self, just bringing my whole self. And that's been really helpful. When it comes to policy, I did have to really exercise that muscle. I didn't have it before, especially when it comes to SDP. And it's been such a huge, huge, huge blessing to be able to unlearn in order to relearn how to write. and there's a tension there because academically you write in a critical voice, you will speak to, you know, what's happening and what's not happening and then give a solution. Whereas in policy, get straight to the point, what are the benefits for this? And so that's interesting. And that's, it's only now that that's what I was saying, just the quicker you can get into yourself and stay yourself, the better, because that makes, mm-hmm. you know, that makes the sector that more robust. And we all need to hear what you have to say. We all need to learn from each other. And I guess the other thing has been why I've chosen to wear these hats. It's happened organically, Erica. I'm trying to think of how, in hindsight now, I'm like, wow, what a space to be in. Mm-hmm. What a sense of responsibility to bear. But also what a sense of responsibility to be yourself and just trust that that's enough and do good and keep remembering that you'll be refined and get better along the way. So I don't know if I've answered your question.
it's better than I could have expected, Lynn. Don't worry. I'm still thinking about some of the things you said. One that I wrote down was you said you spent years siloing your identities. And at some point, thankfully, and I'm really happy to hear that you have come into you've created this space for yourself where you don't feel like you need to do that and you're able to stay authentic and stay yourself and, as you said, add to what the room needs to hear or what's the relevance and the value that you're bringing to that space as yourself, perhaps using different words, perhaps using a different, you know, approach. Obviously, football pitch versus boardroom, it's going to look a little bit different. And so, yeah, that's really something powerful to think about. And I would imagine a lot of other people could feel that way, especially, you know, I'm not speaking from my own lived experience, but I have heard from people coming from the Global South that they just feel this different weight and this different pressure to prove themselves and to speak a certain lingo. So I really respect and admire and appreciate that you shared that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a process, and I actually have my PhD process to thank for that, because there's a section where I had to write about my positionality, and I'd never had to write that, never had to frame who I was. But they're like, no, we've got to get to the bare bones. We want to know you. We want to know how you got here. We want to know your privilege. We want to know the spaces where you feel a slight sense of, you know, if it's disempowerment or if it's a sense of, do I belong in the room? Like, you've got to go there. And it was really difficult, but really important, because then you stop hiding behind different layers. You start off by saying, there are layers to me and there's layers to you, and I'm just being myself. And the thing that connects us is sports, sport for development and peace. I'm not perfect, but I'm here to listen and learn. Full stop, let's go. So it's a constant process. I feel that I was sharpened quite a bit academically, and I'm grateful for that. And that's allowed me or allowed me to exercise that confidence. It wasn't easy, but I would encourage more global South, and I'm speaking to myself here as well. I'd encourage more global South students and researchers to continue to write, especially from Eastern Africa. I'm learning from my peers and the people who are ahead of me who consistently write. And maybe it's worth saying that at the moment, we are one of the editors on the Global South Voices book that's shaping up. And it's been such a joy to be part of that process. And just to see how writing is, you know, if you were to map it, how writing is more, there's an ease to writing in certain areas within the Global South versus other areas, and the need to encourage or nurture writing voice, right? And maybe it boils down to we prefer or lean on oral traditions rather than writing, but it's important to capture that. And so that's the challenge to myself as well. So yeah, I don't have a full solution, but there we go. And yes, that project is being led by Dr. Billy Greff and Simona Sarakova as well, Dr. Simona, and just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people as well.
Lynn, are there any favorite moments or experiences that you can share from working in the sector? I know you're with Commonwealth now. I know you've still got your hand in SWAGA. I know you've done loads of research and work around SDG 16, peace, justice, and strong institutions, of course, through sport. Are there any experiences that stand out that you can share with us?
You ask really good questions. Yes, there's multiple, honestly. And you know what, in honoring the framing that I was saying, that we do global, regional, national, and interlocal, I'll try and answer it from that. Maybe that will help. So from a global perspective, I'm really proud that I'm part of the Sport for Development and Peace team at ComSec. We are small but mighty. It's allowed me to work on issues of gender mainstreaming, youth mainstreaming together with my colleagues, and to build on the good work that was done by our past SDP team members, who really, you know, hats off to them in terms of publishing a lot on in the sector, inviting those voices, ensuring that policy spoke to academia and academia spoke to policy. And now I guess for us, it's taking it a step further to have the local, the community voice also embedded within the research and the policy. And so for me, that's number one, working with ComSec at the moment and the current work on the Global Sport and SDG Impact Report. Then I guess the other bit around that, around policy space that sits with me, is the Massive Open Online course, also still with ComSec, that's been sponsored by the Australian government and also the International Platform on Sport and Development, for Sport and Development and ComSec. The content within that course is brilliant. It's just enough to digest across the 4 weeks, and being an educator on that course and interacting with students from across the world, and even now, like where I'm currently, I'm enrolling sports officials and hearing their perspectives in real time. It's just amazing. It's just brilliant to have that feedback live, you know, fed to you. So that's a key outcome that I'm proud of. So if I go nationally, I'd speak to my research and to the young people that I met in and got the opportunity to work with from LAMU, who were part of the LAMU Arts and Theatre Alliance. And they challenged me because they said, oh, we don't do sport here. For example, we use arts and culture. And, you know, that widened the framework. Wow, we need to consider locally empowering approaches that complement sport or that are maybe even better than sport. And can bring development to an area and are more inclusive. Because, you know, like we're saying, there's the balanced view of sports. Sport is not the answer to everything. However, for them, they said it's more inclusive. We can have our sisters, our mothers, our traditions being part of this process. So that's another one that really stands out to me. I suppose getting the opportunity to travel across the ocean to do research and ethnography in places such as Kiunga, parts of my country that I'd never had the opportunity to see, to hear those stories and be allowed to be with people in their homes and hear their perspectives and even hear the challenges that they face and how sport is working or could work better or does not work at all. Well, very humbling, because you know, you're coming here thinking, yes, this works. And they're like, no, this doesn't work at all. We have wider challenges or wider structural issues that need to be dealt with first, like my identity or my identity card that needs to be sorted by those who are at that macro level, the government level, in order for me to access sport or in order for me to access opportunities that would be allow me to participate in sport. So that's another one. Within the national frame, academically, a moment that stands out for me was being invited to be part of the advisory board for the master's program in Loughborough, London on international development and social change. That's huge. Back to the grassroots, it's still swagger for me. And that would, a really important moment was during the International Day of Sport for Development and Peace back in 2014, 2013, I think. And just seeing with minimal resources, right? Just going for it. We had a really powerful one-day symposium and sports day in Cabarnet. And this is a region in the Rift Valley of Kenya, Greater Rift Valley. But these were children and students from neighboring communities, warring communities. So it wasn't really radicalization, but it was more of traditional radicalization, like in terms of cattle rustling and banditry were some of the challenges that had stopped them from participating in sport and participating in school. But in that moment and in that day, being able to organize that in a neutral sports ground was everything. And I remember us just sitting back with the team, taking that in, soaking that in, and seeing both boys and girls, kids, and different people, including the media, came to support and had like a dancing competition. Just the melting pot that was there that day was a real affirmation that we were in the right direction. And when I feel discouraged, I think about that day. I think about that day a lot, and then I think of the quiet moments when it's not 100 participants, but maybe 3. And some of them are physical education teachers who want to learn how they can embed sport for development and peace within their program and finding a way, you know, it's not fully in the curriculum, but it makes the physical education classes that more engaging. Wow, there you have it. There's a lot. I guess walking across the stage, that's a big one. To get my doctorate, that was a big one. And just passing my viva. All right, that's it. Those are my sports moments today.
Well, another microphone drop moment. We can end here. I feel so satisfied with everything you're giving me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Important follow-up question. Will you write or are you writing an autobiography? And will there be a Swagga film coming out soon?
My goodness, Erica, what is it? What are you? Did Richard put you up to this?
And are you referring to my cat, Richard?
Double yes.
Okay.
double yes to those. Wow. And I guess with the film, it would be around our initiative called One Ball, One Bike, One Goal. So One Ball is this ball that carries all the SDGs, or some of the goals. For us, we'd focused on SDG 3, which is promoting good health and well-being. And one bike was one motorbike. So our friend, he's called the African Rider, was doing a ride through with his KTM Duke from Nairobi, and he rode all the way to Cape Town, South Africa. But all the way, him and the chase car from Swaga, they were distributing, you remember those indestructible footballs, the blue One World Project Play football?
I do, yes. I haven't seen one lately though, so but hopefully they're still indestructible.
They are, they're amazing. And yes, they're a great partner. So we were distributing those footballs across communities and just mapped who or where are the sports, the SDP projects across these 8 different countries. So from Nairobi to Arusha to Zambia, all the way down, trickling down to South Africa and pausing. And Malawi was incredible. But pausing in between each of those countries and meeting with the SDP programs and projects, distributing the footballs, but also learning, like, what's working for you here? How is that captured? Malawi, for example, the girls were just amazing, like just beating up and doing great sport. They were just incredible. And they had a great coach. And so capturing those voices, capturing those stories, would be amazing. So yeah, that would be a repeat. And then one ball, one bike, one goal. The goal being now SDG3. Perhaps would widen it. But it was a really special thing to do over 25 days, over 7,000 kilometers. So maybe that will frame the film. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so just to clarify, you haven't made the film?
We have made parts of it.
You have we made have it. Made. You've made parts
yes,
of it.
Yes, we made parts of it.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I'm so happy. Let me know.
The plan has been to make it annual for quite some time, but life. So we, but it's definitely in the works.
Yeah, that's my dream, personally and professionally, is to create storytelling, especially with film. Like if I could paint my current dream in a few years, I would love to tour the world visiting sport for development and peace organizations and people and package those in really powerful and accurate visual audio stories that can inform the world. What is the sector? How does it feel? How does it look? And why should people care about it? So I just, I'm excited by what you just said.
The next one, you're in it. And anyone else out there who wants to sign up? But yes.
Love that. Well, Lynn, I know we've covered a lot, and I really appreciate the things that we've talked about have, I think, been quite personal in terms of moving through these spaces and your identity and your interests and what you've observed. So I really appreciate that. And it's felt like a really meaningful conversation so far. And I'm wondering if we've left anything out.
Join the dots wherever you are, right? Wherever you are, whoever you are listening, or when, I don't know when you listen to this, but join the dots at whatever level you're in, and don't be afraid to reach out. That's how connections happen. That's how the magic happens. And that's how we're able to spread the word around, you know, the benefits of, or the convening power of sports. And I would also say, don't be afraid to challenge that and bring your ideas, we need to find stronger ways to embed traditional games, sports and games, and indigenous games within the sector as well. We need female coaches, that's what I put out there, and we need female and women in leadership, and we need allies, and we need each other. We need both men and women. We need to be allies, and we need to pause and listen more where we can. And yeah, that's it. Join the dots, really.
And what does joining the dots mean to you, just briefly? I know this whole conversation has been about that, but for someone listening, what does that mean to you, joining the dots?
Joining the dots means allowing yourself to operate fully as yourself across the global, the regional, the national, and the local. Maintaining that golden thread of support for development and peace as your big picture, and opening up spaces for connectivity, and just let that happen and see what will happen from there. So that's what joining the dots means.
Thank you. Now that we know more about our guest's career journey, the rest of our conversation will allow us to have some fun and get to know our guest on a personal level through some rapid-fire questions. We'll then start to wrap up with pointed questions focused on advice and how our listeners can transform interest into action. Enjoy the rest of the conversation. Lynn, what is your favorite aspect of Kenyan culture?
Favorite aspect of Kenyan culture is our collective humor and our food. When it comes to food specifically, I'm talking about chapatis and ugali and nyama choma. So it's our love for food, our love for fun, and our collective humor society to work through different complex issues. But actually, that raises accountability. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite athlete?
Yes, I do. Eliud Kipchoge is my favorite athlete. And I love what he said recently, vitamin N, you know, which is really the no. Learn to say no. So your discipline can shine through. His humility shines through. And I mean, what a mind. I don't know how he transcends and operates in that space, but yeah, he's my favorite athlete.
Which cities have you lived in, and are there any favorites for any specific reasons?
Lived in, not visited, right?
Okay, well, whichever list is easier for you to come up with.
Okay. I have lived in Nakuru. I have lived, which is in Kenya, in Nairobi. I have lived in Lancaster in the United Kingdom. I've lived in Loughborough. I have lived in New York. I have lived in Beausoleil in France, and goodness, which one's been my favorite so far? I'd say New York. Wasn't too hard, was it? because that was a really formative time. I was a really important trajectory that shaped a lot of the conversations that I have now. And just connecting those dots. So it's quite, you know, uncanny that it's now, I'm looking at joining the dots from having started, in a sense, from the UN Office for Partnerships.
I did some internet sleuthing before.
Oh no.
This is all good. Mm-hmm. But you know, you told me when we first spoke that you used to be a musician. Mm-hmm. And Lynn, you're an amazing singer. Amazing. Share with the audience like your musical journey. I mean, clearly we've dedicated the last hour to support for development and peace, and I'm sure we could dedicate many more hours to that or to music, but where did that come from? What did you do with it? Was it in Kenya? Was it elsewhere? I'm in awe. You're incredible.
Thank you. Oh my goodness, the internet never forgets. I am a gospel Afro soul musician. I just have not sang in a while. I have 3 albums, and prior to my PhD, not that this is what stopped me, I was working on an album called Nyumbani, which means home in Swahili, and sang it in my mother tongue, which is Tugen, Kalenjin Tugen, and I've been singing for a bit, Erica. When I was in my undergrad, my parents were like, okay, you can sing if your grades stay up. So what I did was right after class, I was still a day scholar, I would run to practice or I'd run to studio, and I'd save money and gotten some support as well from family. And I recorded my first album called Epistles to You. It's really, you know, poetic thinking about it now. I'm really proud of my younger self. And you know, did multiple concerts in Kenya. So sometimes I go home and people say, why did you stop singing? I haven't stopped singing. I will sing. And it's just been a while, but it's there. And there's some exciting projects. I feel like I've been saying that for years, but I promise there's some exciting projects coming.
Have you mixed music and sport at all?
Yeah, I'm thinking of it, you know, because we're talking about joining the dots, aren't we? And joining your different identities and your different names. So I am Lynn Chirurbai Sambili Gisheha. Musically, I am Ruri, which comes from Chirurbai, my middle name. That's been my home name. So if you really putting myself out there now. But yeah, so the two intersect. Good find. I would.
Wow. I didn't have to do too much digging, to be honest, in a good way. You're YouTube. Yeah. Anyways. All right. We'll move on. I don't want to. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Thank you.
Lynn, advice. What advice do you have for someone who is dreaming of breaking into the sport for development and peace sector?
Okay. Advice for somebody breaking into the SDP sector. Welcome. The door is open. Be willing to learn, but also to contribute. Don't join blindly in the sense of that, you know, sport will answer all things, but understand that it will support many things. I guess also sign up for the MOOC, not a plug, could be a plug. And we'll talk more about sport for development and peace across different layers, different dots. And it's such, we're so lucky that we're in this day and age where we can connect so quickly and so easily. Reach out, you know, Erica's amazing, you know, she's got this podcast and she can connect wherever you are with different people. And start where you are. I think that's the final thing. Start where you are, document your journey, reflect, give yourself space to think about why you want to get into the sector or what's driving you. And understand that will change. You will be refined over time. That's a very good thing. You want to keep growing. And where you grow, please create more spaces for others to grow with you. Yeah. That's the challenge I have for myself.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, how can our audience support you or your work moving forward?
Oh, wow. I've got this list. Just give me a minute. I'll be right back with it. I'm joking. So with the policy, please engage with the Model Indicators Project. That's the Category 1 and Category 2 indicator framework on measuring the contribution of sports to the SDGs. Please read the free resources that are there. With Sport and Dev, it's an incredible platform. Please utilize it. And more importantly, sign up to the Massive Open online course, which is where you meet incredible people, if you're not there already. And even if you are, you know, share it widely. That would really support the ecosystem or the sector to grow. Another way to support work is to share your stories. Share your stories, please. If you have case studies or ideas around how we can do policy better, Please do not shy away from sharing that. If you have ideas on how we can do academics better and the intersect between sports, SDP and academia and practitioner work, please share those stories. Please share those case studies.
Great. Great. Well, my final question, Lynn, that I love to ask all of my amazing guests and that you gave me permission to invite you to answer in Swahili with perhaps an English translation, no pressure, is Lynn, who or what inspires you?
So the person that inspires me is my mom, Mama Nyun, my mother, Professor Helen Sambili. She is the definition of what we call processless success. She was a member of parliament, but before she was even that, she was a teacher, and she was always and is still always putting people first in terms of navigating and finding opportunities for them, reaching out, connecting and empowering them, be that bursaries or a contact that will change the trajectory of their lives. She inspires me. I remember when I was doing my PhD, the one advice she gave was be aggressively positive, which is unusual to combine such words. But she said, you're going to need that for this final leg in order to get to the finish line and beyond. So if you're writing up your thesis and you're at that level where you want to give up, be aggressively positive about your process. You're so much further than you think, because she has a PhD herself. And she's just an incredible, incredible woman. I have not answered this in Swahili, have I? Chamin Mama, and she really inspires me. And in terms of partnering and someone who's seen me through these transitions of these joining of dots and has supported that process as well would be my partner, my husband as well. He really inspires me, and he says he could see it before I could, when I was still in the trenches and it wasn't clear. He saw it, and so he inspires me as well.
Lynn asked me to send a huge shout out of gratitude and recognition to one more inspiration, Edwin, a key team member in Kenya on the Swaga team who has held down the fort. Lynn says thank you so much for being the office manager and so much more. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Inspira podcast with Erica Mueller Chen. I really hope you enjoyed the episode and found it useful. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. Specifically, my link tree is there with tons of awesome information. Feel inspired to take action today? I've got 3 action steps you can take right now because you know your girl likes calls to action and the number 3. So here goes. Number 1. Follow the podcast on your chosen podcast platform. Number 2, share your feedback with me through the listener survey listed on that link tree. And number 3, tell just one friend about this podcast so they can give it a listen too. And do I have any overachievers out there? I've got a bonus action step, which is to consider supporting me and making sure this passion project prospers. So number 4, follow the link to buy me a coffee. That would be pretty amazing. Until next time, stay inspired.